waiting for Vicky to call in right now. Sorry about all the technical issues tonight, but I've been drinking. Hello? Well, we're still here. We're still waiting for dear Vicky. And
hello, I thought you were starting. What?
And well, what? I was supposed to be sober tonight, but my girlfriend Tracy said either you drink or I'll dump you. So this is why we've had all the technical issues. So if you're going to blame anybody, blame her. Right, Tracy?
I suppose so. What? Oh, my.
Yeah, she takes no blame for it.
Oh, I got to.
God. We will do this, and now we'll have the interview of Doom 2 and Spaceman. Me and Tracy have been spending the just watching randomness. We watched a sci-fi movie, a rock documentary. What else was it? Just
we kind of had a Beatles theme going on there. Yeah.
Oh yeah, remember? Beatles.
I'm sorry. Yesterday, and then the John Lennon versus the U.S. documentary.
Yeah.
Very cool. So that kind of was like a minor trend there. It was a variety.
Yeah, very good, because she is, like we call her, the mistress of sci-fi, the one and only, she who shall not be messed with.
Yeah. True. She is a true Renaissance woman.
Yeah. A teacher, a writer, a sci-fi fan, an almost committer of justifiable homicide, but let's not talk about that.
That was funny. I was going to say, also a loving grandmother.
Yeah, a loving grandmother, a loving cat mother.
Right, yeah, true.
Yeah. Her phone's giving her poop tonight. Probably
okay.
Has to do with a lot of that stuff, like Facebook going down today and all that, song and dance.
Yeah, I'm still uncertain as to what was behind that. Luckily, I was otherwise occupied when a lot of that was going on, but that was weird, yeah.
Yeah, I was occupied too, but that's weird waking up and finding out there's a lot of people, oh, my Facebook's broken. I hit it with a ball bat.
Well, it's frustrating, but futile, and these things happen.
Yeah.
I would give an intro to tonight's movie, but I haven't seen it due to the alarming lack of movie theaters and my immediate environment. That could be a whole show in itself, decline and hopefully revival of theaters, actually.
Yeah, there should be, but I doubt it's going to happen because people have gotten too lazy, and their first question is, when is this going to hit streaming?
Oh, yeah, I agree. I mean, there are theater buffs, but sadly they're in the minority when you combat that kind of a mindset. People are way too used to it, and the pandemic just made it worse. It's true.
Yeah. I mean, it's sad. People are like, ain't gonna get no DVD-S20, but they'll play for having the right of movies vanish on them out of the freaking blue.
That's kind of a paradox as well. That's true. You gotta wonder, well, it's all of our priorities lie, I guess, you know, and people that wanted to be homebodies before that were, you know, would be going to the movies themselves, when that was reinforced that they could stay home, they just took that and ran with it because it was better than ever. You didn't have to wait 5 years for it to be on TV anymore. With streaming, it's right there at your fingertips, obviously, and all.
Yeah.
So if you're a homebody, you know, this century is made for you.
Yeah.
Could do it all on a screen.
Yeah, everybody wants to be nobody.
Wants to be nobody?
Yeah, they want to have the right to have their stuff where they buy and stuff taken away from them.
The right to buy.
Oh. Hold on.
Sure thing.
Sorry, people, I done another screw-up, because that's what I do for a living. I was supposed to center the episodes, and I centered the main menu instead, because I'm a dummy.
Menu?
Yeah.
Well, maybe it could be remedied.
Yeah.
Don't lose hope.
I don't lose hope.
Yeah.
I hope people can hear this, because
yes,
because otherwise they'll be hearing me talking to myself and think I'm more insane than I am, which
I would assume my friend would be okay, but I don't know that for sure.
Yeah, I just know my microphone.
Okay. I don't know. They might not hear me. I do not know, but...
Yeah, they'll hear me, but I got you right next to the microphone.
Okay. Oh, there's a good chance, then. Why not? I'm just flying by the seat of my pants here. Yeah, so why not?
Pantalones.
Yeah, true. What a fun word.
So we're trying to fix things, and that's my job.
What are some other upcoming sci-fi films we should be on the alert
for?
Oh,
there she is.
Oh, good. Awesome.
Wait.
Awesome. I'm eager to hear her.
Hey. Hello.
Hi.
We're on the air. Tell me, just be quiet for a second. Say hello.
Okay. Hello.
Say hello. Say hello.
Hello.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Did you hear Tracy's voice?
Is that Tracy? Tracy.
Vicky. Hey, how you doing?
Hey.
Awesome to talk to you.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I cannot believe how hard it was for me to get on. Ah.
It's pretty frustrating.
Yeah. Sorry I confused the heck out of you. Tracy, I just want to meet the mistress of sci-fi that you've looked up to for her sci-fi knowledge.
Always. Yeah, I am. I'm going to let you guys go in a minute here, but I am bowed over to finally, you know, talk to her, definitely.
Yeah, that's, nice to hear your voice is awesome.
Oh, yeah, you too. I know. I thought about, like, actually calling you before, but I was kind of shy about it. Yeah. Especially when we talked about the Barbie doll and all, but yeah.
Right.
I'm looking forward to your thoughts on this, so.
Did you see it yet?
No, I have not.
Oh,
okay.
I might say some spoilers.
Well, I don't care. I'm still going to get to it.
Okay.
I'm going to let you guys get to it. So, yeah, great talking to you. Good luck. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Love
you too.
Crazy.
Of course. I can't wait to hear this. Carry on.
Yeah. This week, I mean seriously themed sci-fi. Pew pew. Maybe some big ass bones, but you know what I mean.
That's right.
And since this is Vicky's show, let's let her get down and, well, we'll save Doom for the big one because that's probably why people would want to listen to it.
Right. Well, hi, everyone. Welcome to my sci-fi show. And since the last time that I did this show, I got a new phone, which is not a new phone. It's a refurbished phone. And this phone sucks because I can't do anything with it. So anyway, we're here and we're going to talk about Dune. Actually, we're going to talk about two films, Spaceman or The Spaceman. I'm not sure if The is part of the title. And,
well,
of course,
just think of how many movies throughout the years where we've gotten rid of, The.
Right. Everything is so pared down these days. Minimalist. I mean, as if that's a cool thing. It's not. Being a minimalist is not a cool thing. And we're just starting to realize that all those assholes that push it on us are just doing it so they could make money off of you throwing away all your stuff and buying new stuff. So anyway, the reason why I even said that is the minimal austerity of Dennis's Dune really bothers me. It bothers me a lot. And that's why I will never, ever give these movies A pluses. And so anyway, we're going to talk about Dune Part 2, which is just a little bit better than Dune Part 1. And hopefully Dune Part 3 will even be better. Have you seen it yet, Stephen?
No, I haven't been able to get out.
Yeah. Well, I hate to, you know, get in here and ruin it for
don't
anyone.
Don't worry. I know that it brings in a little flavor of New Messiah into it.
Yes. Yeah, and then just like, well, here's the thing. I have read the first two books, but I didn't read Dune or The Children of Dune before I saw the David Lynch film. And the David Lynch film, as everyone knows, everyone has their own opinion about it, but it blew my mind because sci-fi can be and should be that far out, and yet I didn't really understand the story, the depth of what was going on with the story. So I went out and I bought the book, and the book is just this, oh, and if you, I loved reading trilogies, but mostly I read fantasy back then. And so I was not, I read a lot of science fiction also, lots and lots of science fiction, Martian Chronicles, which is pretty all contained within one book, but it's Chronicles. Pretty dense, you know? But
yeah,
it's not like Dune. Dune is like eating a 7-course meal and then having a 3-course dessert. I mean, it's that dense. And so
well,
I was really happy. Go ahead.
Because
you've read the book, right?
The thing about David Lynch's Dune is he made us a 5-course meal. But then Dino De Laurentiis decided to make it into a pizza with a brownie.
Right.
Pizza.
Right, exactly. Exactly. You know, when people are told they can make a certain movie or, you know, contracted for a movie, and then after you make it, the producers come in and chop it up and rearrange it and do all this stuff to it, you know, it usually fails. And the theatrical release of Dune was a failure, you know, David Lynch. And then there was the director's cut, which was better. A lot better.
Yeah.
And so, but still,
this is a
spoiler
without a spoiler, Vicky. There's only one thing that I missed that was in David Lynch's Dune that's not in Pedro Pascal's Dune. You know what that is? Red hair.
No.
But let's not get into that.
You know what? Okay, you know, that's another thing right there. That's part of the austerity of this revisioning of Dune that I don't like, because there's a small time that we are actually at the Emperor's, his planet and his palace and where they're at. And seriously, you can't tell the difference between a Harkonnen planet and palace and an Emperor's planet and palace. I mean, seriously, you can't, there's no difference. Everything is so austere. Everything is brown, gray, and black. Everywhere. And
that was nice,
supposed to be this contrast.
Yeah. And that was a nice little thing with the book, with David Lynch's use of the picture books in the movie. He was able to show you House Harkonnen, House Getty Prime, House Atreides.
Right. And at least the first movie, it did, started out on the Atreides planet. Oh, I can't think of it. And
House Atreides, that's all it was.
Yeah, no, the planet has a name, and I know the name, but I can't think of it at this moment because I don't have anything up in front of me to help me. I have no prompt in front of me, you guys. So I'm doing this right at this moment. On memory, but I'll try to get some things up so I don't sound so stupid. But when you're on on the Atreides planet in the first movie of Dennis's, and I can't even say his last name, so I'm not going to say it. That's Dennis's movie. Yeah, I'm not going to say it.
It's Spanish.
Yes. And, you know, that it's okay. The thing is that, let's see here. I'll just say the House Atreides. This isn't going to say. Anyway.
Caladan.
Yeah, Caladan. That's right. And it's blue, and it has water, and it has atmosphere, and it has clouds, and they live on a cliff. Even Paul in this new movie says it to Chani. She asks about the planet, and he says there's, you know, an ocean, and our palace was up on the cliff overlooking the ocean, and the ocean waves would crash upon the cliff. And, you know, it gives you that sense of contrast, which Frank Herbert tried to do with his books, with the planets all being three different things. The Harkonnens, of course, were red. The Emperor was lavish with gold and you know,
it
an
was
emperor's
a mechanical
palace.
Planet, I think.
Yes, and well, the thing about it is that they were different. But in this new movie, everything is the same. You can't tell planet you're on by what it looks like, by any of the architecture, and so any of the coloring, and then also the red hair is missing. So very important to the story of Atreides and Harkonnen and all of that. So bloody important to the Bene Gesserit and what they've been doing all these centuries.
Are the Guild Spice Navigators in the movie?
No. Wait. There is a scene where the ones who are taking the spice, who are not navigators yet, they are all lined up in this reminds me of the video game I play. They're just lined up in these dark, shadowy areas, and they're looking into where a navigator is. But it was at that point where I started to feel my eyelids getting really kind of heavy because I was starting to get bored with the new movie that I kind of had to go, oh, wake up. Here are the navigators.
So that one was main political power in Dune, so he could do this whole religious jihad song and dance.
Yes. Okay, this is the weird thing. As I'm watching the film, and I know now, 30 years later, I know this story inside and out. And as I'm watching it, I'm still thinking to myself, as I did the first Dennis movie, part one, he is relying on everybody's memory of David Lynch's film or the miniseries in the mid-2000s. Because both those films had intrigue, whereas Dennis's film has visual effects and spectacular epic scenery and explosions and nothing in between.
There's only one thing I want to ask, and if you say no, it'll break my heart.
Okay.
Was the line "you young pup" mentioned in the movie at least once?
Yes. When Gurney and Paul see each other. But you know what? I have a lot of respect for Josh Brolin. I have a lot of respect for him.
But he ain't no pup in the car.
But yeah, well, I like him. Like, there was that show on Amazon that he did, and it just got no attention at all. And it was about parallel worlds. He was a rancher out on his ranch, and it was a weird sci-fi show, which I just really loved. And of course, it never got a second season. It was called not Open Range, but something Range. I can't remember. Anyway, Josh Brolin knew that he had to say that. And so me knowing that he better say it, it seemed like a really awkward moment. When Patrick Stewart says it to Kyle MacLachlan in Lynch's film, it just kind of flows like, oh my God, he says this, but here, yeah, he says it, but it doesn't flow. The spice does not flow.
That's one thing they never talk about, is that Lynch's Dune has a high sense of family. The Harkonnens, yes, love the Harkonnens. The Atreides love each other, including Gurney Halleck and them.
Yes. Well, you know, Paul is allowed emotions in Dennis's movie. And so Paul loves Duncan. Paul loves Gurney. Paul loves his father, and Paul loves his mother. But in this movie, his mother does not love him. She is a tool. And in this
movie, that wasn't even written yet.
So they made her, and the perfect word is austere. In the first movie, she has all this fake crying when the Reverend Mother is with Paul. And I didn't buy it then, and I just don't buy Rebecca Ferguson, period. She has one face and one face only, and one expression only. Watch Silo. She has the same face. Watch the movie she did I can't think of his name. I'm so sorry. I mean, she, watch her stuff. If she even cracks a smile, it's because the ice around her face kind of melted. I mean, she just has one expression, and I guess she's so beautiful, everyone just loves her. All the men do. They just love her. She's so beautiful. So she doesn't have to act.
That the two versions of Dune that were written, and one was directed by two magnificent madmen who made strange and bizarre surreal movies, were more true to Herbert's vision of Dune than someone who is trying to make an austere movie.
Yeah. I think that. I mean, plenty of people are heralding it as epic. It is in its scope. You know, I don't want to give anyone the wrong idea. The cinematography is fantastic. The music this time is even better. The music really goes along with the story. The music is better. It's not so foreign. And what I mean foreign is that in the first movie, the music seemed like it needed to prove a point that it was going to be different. This time it feels more organic and really fit. And so I think Hans Zimmer did a much better job this time with the music, with the score. And so I'm not saying that this movie is not worth seeing, but the people that sat behind me, there weren't very many people in the theater when I saw it. I saw it on the first showing on the first day, 11:30 in the morning, which means there were only 8 of us in the theater. So the people that were behind me, this guy brought his date, and they were middle-aged people, okay? And she didn't know what was going on, and he had to keep explaining stuff to her. Because even though out there in the public, they're like, this is much better. You don't have to know the story to follow this movie. Well, this woman couldn't follow it very well. She kept asking, what's this? What's this? What's this? So that's the failure in the story, but that's because of the writer, the screenwriter. Okay? You know who that is, Stephen?
Did Dennis Behu write it himself?
No, he did not.
Who wrote
one
it?
One of the worst hacks ever, John Spate. Now, I'm just going to tell you that he wrote he wrote Passengers with Lindelof, which was one of the worst movies ever. It was like an adolescent dream up there.
I would call it Justifiable Rape the Movie.
Yeah, yes, exactly. That's it. And so he also has credits of writing Doctor Strange, the first one, and Prometheus, which he and Lindelof, I mean, you know I like Prometheus, but I like it beyond the script writing. I like it for where the story takes it. And that's a lot to do with Ridley Scott and not the hacks that helped him write the screenplay. So John Spates, who I do not believe should be a science fiction writer. Maybe he's better at something else, but science fiction. And so he got nominated for Best Adaptation for Dune, for his work on Dune, which I don't know who these people are, but they're stupid. They're just stupid.
And so how... bad the music is in the first film, the best music in the movie is the one in the trailer that does a Pink Floyd song. You gotta admit that was a great music track for that trailer.
I thought so. I thought the trailer was really good. In fact, the trailer is so good. It's just like everything these days, the trailer is better. It brings your expectations up, and then you go to the film, and you're like, what am I watching? So the screenwriter is a misogynist human being. And that's, you know, I don't want to say bad things, but he is. And so you have these women who now, even though Frank Herbert did set the Bene Gesserit up to be these manipulating people, but their whole goal is to bring peace so the spice will flow. Okay, that's their whole thing. But in this film, it's more like the women are doing this to be spiteful.
So I will admit that even if I like the movie, I'm going to be off. How they turn Chani and the honorable in Frank Herbert world act of being a concubine into something obscene.
You know, the whole twist, this is why John Spates fails, is he can't write women. He doesn't know how to write women. And so the whole, if you watch the miniseries of Dune, Jessica, who is Paul's mother, has many chats with Chani and tries to get Chani to see, because Chani and Paul are definitely in love. And Paul is like the youngest of all of them, and so he has a lot of maturing he has to do. Yet they still fall in love, okay? They have their little love scenes in this Dune Part 2, Dennis's movie. But they never, ever talk about Well, they don't talk hardly at all. And then they talk about his dreams a little bit. But Chani is never given the chance to understand that Paul is a duke and he's going to have to marry well, okay, marry the emperor's daughter, Erlin. And so
they've been listed in one line.
Yeah, he didn't even, yeah, but here's the thing, he didn't even go into that.
We are concubines. History
right.
will call us wives.
Yes, right. And so David Lynch was thinking he was going to get a part two so that he could delve into all of that. And then Chani was okay with it because she was like, Paul's standing here with me. But in Doom Part 2, spoiler here, as Paul becomes the Mo'adib that he doesn't want to be, when he finally has to do it, they shove him into this place where he doesn't want to be, but that's his mother's fault. They keep shoving him and shoving him into this place till he finally, kind of like an older teenager, just says, fuck it, I'll be your Messiah. And then Chani's like, oh, no, I don't believe in the Messiah. Why are you doing this? And it kind of sets up this thing between them. So that at the end, when Erlin comes in and, you know, saves the day for her father, it just, right. There's just, it just seems fake. And that's because John Spates can't write females.
Well, the split between the Fremen don't hit until a little bit in Child Emperor Dune after Aaliyah becomes Aaliyah the Mad, and
right.
definitely in God Emperor of Doom.
Right, right. And so she doesn't, we don't even see her born in this movie. She's not even born.
She becomes like the villain of Doom
Messiah
and God Emperor and Children of Doom.
Right. Well, she goes insane because of the Harkonnen blood. And she is she's the wicked leader of the jihad that won't stop, that won't ever stop. And so these things are sort of set up, but they're not set up well in this film because you don't have Paul and Chani as a together, as a strong force. I don't even know how they're going to write the next film to bring them together because their whole, this is the problem with it, is that in the first film, and nothing against the actress who played Liette, nothing against her. I've watched the film several times, and I like her take on Liette. The problem here is that Dune is set up for Chani and Paul to first come together because both their fathers have been killed. This is the common ground for them to come together. They both passionately
that annoys me. They took out one of their major instant bonding things.
Yeah. Yes.
And it was just a simple line in Lynch's, you have lost your father too.
Exactly. Exactly. And by changing that one thing because it's so woke to do it, and I'm not a fan of woke. I'm a fan of everybody deserves their chance and their spotlight and their everything, but don't change it because this is going to make you feel like you're doing some great good.
And they didn't even talk about Liet's love of the planet.
This is another instance where the writing of the female character that was supposed to be a male character failed. And so now they don't have that in common. Yes, okay, they both lost a parent that they both loved. But one was a mother and one was a father. And that is not the way Frank Herbert wrote his story. So now this rift that, well, this joining that never really gelled between Paul and Chani is being torn apart by these religious factions that should not even be happening yet.
And plus, without the Spice Guild operators, the other houses were not there to say, fuck you to Paul.
Right.
Because that was one of the important parts at the end, because the guild, I was like, no, the other houses were like, we don't have to take your, no, we have to take our shit. He controls the spice. Did they even mention that little tiny detail? Controls the world, controls the universe.
No, they are so taken with all this other stuff that they're doing in this film that all of the entire reason, here and there, because they have no scenes where they actually talk about the things that are happening. This is my big beef about this movie, is now I've already been pushed back on this. There are people that say, there's scenes where they talk. Oh, yeah? Well, they don't have any substance. There's no substance to their. So,
and in David Lynch's film, there is so much talk of the importance of the spice from the Mentat Peter going, the spice is what turns the juice red. The red is the juice. Is what makes the juice. The juice is what turns the lips red. The red gives me intelligence. Thus I drink the spice.
Exactly. I read a review, and the person who wrote that review said that he was very upset that the Mentats were not featured in this film. They're gone. And they served whatever purpose in the beginning of the film, but they were barely there anyway. And in Dune, in this other one, there's nothing. No, there's no reason why. Why does the Baron Harkonnen go sleep in this oily bath stuff? This thick, globby, liquid oil stuff, right?
He didn't explain it in the Lynch movie either, but in the books, the Baron Harkonnen loves his grossness and his diseases and there because it made people disgusted and fear him.
Right. And they're all about fear, but also the Baron he's taking spice also because he wants to live forever. And the Baron is taking daily doses of spice. You don't see any of that in this movie. You don't see the Baron. Actually, the Baron has no real point. Sorry, big movie star Skarsgård, but your character in this movie has no point.
Speaking of no point, the main guy who is afraid of his cousin and use the power of the Harkonnens to stealthily murder him is barely even a character in the second film, right?
If you're talking about Batista's?
The Padishah Emperor.
Character? Oh, the Emperor? He is like, if believe me, if you blink too hard, you will absolutely miss it. Because, like I said before, the austerity of this,
but
when
the
they are on the planet, the Emperor's palace, you can't tell the difference between the Baron Harkonnen's palace. There's no difference. So you don't even know that they're there. You don't know where they are. And they're in this dark room. It looks vast. The darkness looks vast around them. They're sitting on this bench that is it reminds me, the bench they're sitting on reminds me of 2001 and the monolith. They're sitting on a bench, and they have their kind of their backs to each other, and they're glancing over their shoulders, talking to each other, the emperor and his daughter. I mean, this is important stuff. They're talking about Arrakis, Dune. They're talking about the planet that has the spice. Faster than light travel or folding of space, okay, whichever one you want to buy into. This is the most important thing to the Emperor, because the Emperor has all these planets, all this commerce, all this. If you blink, that scene is over.
Am I right? He, in the book and the Lynch movie, it says that the Padishah Emperor is 500 years old, or is it 300?
I can't remember, because he's not taking spice, but they all live a long time. But here's the thing, when you start folding space and going from planet to planet, you are perceived as older because you come back and the planet is older. Even if you're folding through the light, you know, FTL, you're still losing time to those people. And so it's, you know, the more I think about it, the more I get upset the fact that they spent so much money on the thopters, which are pretty cool. You know, they're based on insects, and so they're pretty cool looking. Although I like the other ones better with the rotors. They're pretty cool, but here's the thing: when you're spending all your money on special effects, then you don't have enough time in the movie for the people to talk, and it's all about the story. It's all about the people, the interactions in the people, not the freaking machine, not the freaking explosions in the war.
Dune, cutting out the political aspect of Dune is like cutting out the monolith in 2001.
That's really good, Stephen. That's what, yes. If you're, at the beginning of Lynch's Dune, and at the beginning of the miniseries, the Irulan, the daughter of the Emperor, and she speaks about how important Dune is. And the differences in the houses and why all this is happening. She sets a foundation. But Dennis, I remember an interview and saying he's not going to do that because his movie's going to be different. Well, he didn't do that, and his movie is different. It's more confusing by taking out these things.
That's one of the things I like the best about the David Lynch Dune is the whole chapter book thing from Aurelian.
Yeah.
It explains so much without bogging us down with And in the book, she is the narrator because it's basically someone reading the chapter book of the society, the Religious Society of Maldib.
Right. Right. She is the historian of this whole jihad that happened. And so to cut that out of your film is to cut out one third of the understand. I mean, a third of it. And that's the audience needs to be engaged. And so that's why I wrote on my Facebook page about how this movie is like a chocolate cake, a beautifully decorated chocolate cake with cherries and strawberries and chocolate frosting and little swirlies and everything. And it's so beautiful. But you know what? You're starving. You're starving. And so that's all there is to eat. So you eat it down. Even though it's so beautiful, you eat the whole thing down. But you know what? In 60 minutes, you're going to be starving again because a cake does not give you what you need to sustain your life, your energy, your body. And that's what this movie is. It's beautiful.
And Herbert's book is like you eating the same cake, but you're talking with someone like in My Dinner with Andre. So you get a full intellectual meal.
The dinner. You get the steak and the potatoes and the vegetables and the soup beforehand, maybe the salad. That, I mean, that's
yeah.
going to sustain you because that's substance. But this movie, it doesn't have that. It only has empty calories. Really beautiful.
Yeah,
everybody walks around in this metal, all this metal shit. I don't get it. It's so stupid. They're walking around in chainmail, and they don't even fight. Erlen is walking around in all this metal getup, where she's the richest woman in the whole freaking universe, and she doesn't even wear beautiful clothing. No, she wears metal. What? Come on.
Okay.
This is stupid.
Here's my next question for you. The still suits.
Okay.
The still suits. Wow. What do they do for the still suits?
Well, I kind of liked their whole thing with the water and the still suits in this film. In the miniseries, they had a low budget and they were pretty flimsy, but I still like Lynch's stilt suits. I like them best because they have pouches for water, for recycling, and all that. These are again.
The had the most important part, which because of the studio, they couldn't have in the probably the Vehu or the Lynch version. They didn't
yeah.
have the full masks. There's a reason.
Yeah.
How much, as you know, the science major, how much water
right.
are they losing by not covering up their heads and taking the sweat? And
well, yes. You know what really bothered me about this movie? They weren't covering their eyes. This is a planet of sand, and you have got to have your eyes covered. You need special goggles, right?
Ow.
And they're riding worms, and they don't have any protection for their eyes.
Is the song as good as Toto's when they ride the worms?
You know, I don't like Toto very much. I never really liked that, the music to that. But, you know, everyone likes different things. No,
yeah.
I don't think the worms are any different. In fact, my favorite worms are in the miniseries because during one of those dreams that Paul has, the vision dreams, the worms come up and they're crying out to the sky and the moons are out. It's a beautifully artly done scene. And they're just beautiful. And but these worms, Dennis's worms, they are just round. They don't have the orifices that come together, those triangle-like faces that come together. No, no, no. His are round and come together like a suction cup or something.
Yeah, but the good old inverted popcorn bucket.
I didn't even look at the popcorn bucket. I didn't even look. I should have. I didn't even think about it. Yeah.
But it is nice to be able to see a serious sci-fi film on the big screen again. Rather than some like, I like it, but like Guardians of the Galaxy, Star Wars, pew, 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 pew.
Well, I didn't like that. Guardians of the Galaxy number 3, I thought it was just a horrible movie.
Well,
I'm glad I didn't pay.
About the whole pew, pew, pew thing rather than.
Yeah. But there's a lot of pew, pew, pew in Dennis's Dune. A lot.
Well, they have to. They're trying to stop
spice
production.
Right. But that doesn't even,
they didn't mention this in the first Dune. Do they have the weirding weight or weirding modules?
No. They didn't even talk about it, which is another failure. A total failure. They didn't even talk. They didn't show the people being trained. They never showed the people with whom Paul made connections with the men, the Fremen men, you know, that he makes connections with, and they follow him. There's very little connection between them. Now, to say that the sieges, here's more special effects. Yeah. Those were beautiful. But the people within them, they were just people. They might have been dressed differently and had different color skin. Whoop-de-doo. Because we never got to see them interact with each other.
Without the weirding modules, they cut out one of the most important lines of dialogues and incidents. Where the Fremen, one of the Fremen says Maudib's name, and then boom, Maudib's name is a killing word.
Yes, that's so great, isn't it? No, that's not in it.
That's even in the miniseries.
Yes. Well, okay, here's the deal. In this movie, I did not buy into any of the fact that Paul was the Moadib, was the Messiah. I never bought it because there's really nothing that shows it.
Yeah, and there's no mention
Jessica
of the place where the Bene Gesserit cannot see.
There is one mention of it. One. But it really doesn't connect.
So
and
there's
that's
another
the whole thing
one of my
right
favorite
there.
Lines in the book, Cut.
Yeah. Oh, no.
When
this movie.
That place where you cannot see, you will see me staring right back at you.
I love that. Oh, God. I'm going to have to watch that tonight. Kyle does it so well. He really does do a really great job of going from an innocent to a messiah without being
cruel. Now, Lynch was great with his
cruel.
Casting.
Yeah, well, I think the cast could have done better if the writing was better.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Fade. Fade Rutha. They give him a new name. Do you want me to really spoil it?
Yeah, go ahead.
There's a scene okay, the, you know how the Bene Gesserit and the guild are really afraid about what the hell's happening on Dune, on Arrakis. And they're thinking that they're going to have to make some kind of partnership for Uralin. To when the Emperor fails, she's going to have to marry someone. So they decided that fate is worth looking at. And so they do the whole box thing, the whole Bene Gesserit box thing with Fade.
What?
Yeah, you know that whole, you know, put your hand in the box, Paul, and...
Well, they cut out the political angle, so they have to do the religious angle of the box. Stupidity.
Yes, I was really shocked that they did that. That's like, okay, this is a new take on... The story of Dune.
Well,
whoa.
Fade was groomed since birth to marry Aurelian and become the next Padishah Emperor.
Right, because Jessica had a boy instead of a girl, and instead of having a daughter, she ruined it for the Atreides because the Emperor wanted the Atreides, and he wanted an allegiance between he and the Atreides. But having the daughter, I mean, having the son instead of the daughter, wait, how does that go? Because they were going to marry a Harkonnen to an Atreides. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
But anyway, I have to say that the Austin Butler part of this really amused me and kept me awake and kept me interested in it because he was the only one out of all of them except for Timothée Chalamet that we haven't even talked about yet. He's the only other actor, and what's his name who plays Gurney? He's the only actor really who actually tried with facial expressions, with his eyes, with his mouth, with his shoulders, with the tilting of his head, with body language to infuse some kind of character into the role he was playing. I like what he does. Because it's so different than the austerity that we see from every other character.
He's just gunning to become a next Star Trek captain.
Well, that could be true. I've been watching the Apple TV Masters of Air, of the Air, the World War II show. And yeah. I like him. I've liked Austin Butler since I saw him in Shannara. I always liked him. Not because he's cute, but because I like what he does with his roles. But he is very cute, okay? He is. He's perfect for Fade because he has to be that kind of cute, handsome guy.
Yeah.
But, the whole thing, this is what I wanted to say about the Fade character. That whole thing with the knife and his tongue, they keep saying that Fade is psychotic. I think you hear it from three or four other characters. Oh, but he's psychotic. Oh, he's psychotic. The psychotic one? They keep saying it, right? This is... fiction writing 101, your character show don't tell. And so they keep telling he's psychotic.
Yeah. I mean, look
and
at
so
Sting. You can just tell by the way he was enjoying the knife out this boy ain't right in the head.
Okay. But instead of showing him being psychotic, They put him in an arena where he has to fight people. Well, God, anyone's going to be crazy enough to kill to save their lives, right? So that doesn't show that he's psychotic. So the only other scene that he actually has to show that he's psychotic is the little knife scene where he's given the knife and he wants to make sure that it's sharp, so he cuts his tongue. That's not psychotic. That's like personality disorder. Okay?
But he's too smart to play the beast, Raban.
Right. And then Raban, you know, I don't know. They did a pretty good job with Raban. And I was also disappointed in the death of the Baron and the death of Raban. Their deaths were boring. And I love that the Baron is, you know, in Lynch's film, Paul's sister, can't think of her name. Paul's sister, yeah, comes and, you know, uses the needle on him and says grandfather. And it happens the same way also in the miniseries. And she's not even born yet when the Baron dies. So there's no chance for that interaction.
One of the things that made Aaliyah dangerous, because she was with her mother and absorbed the water of life through when her mother drank it, she come out fully developed and intelligent and with the full powers of a Bene Gesserit witch.
Right. Right.
And she grew at an exponential rate, as way they put it.
And that's not what happens in the movie. The movie shows Jessica pregnant for her 9 months. And also, the baby's never born. They do show when she takes the water of life, and they show this gross segment of the fetus being affected and growing, but she's never born. Unless I missed something, because I kept waiting to see her. Now, there is a small part where Paul talks to his sister all the time through telepathy, his mom's belly and her talking. And then when they're separated, they still have a connection. So they're telepathically linked and they have these conversations in his dreams and in his head. And so that's okay, but she's never really there. And we only see her once in a fleeting, like 15 seconds, maybe 30 seconds, I don't know, as a grown woman. And so,
in the movie that shows the fetus inside their belly, and she holds up a sign and it says, see you next film.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's another thing that annoyed me about one. It's like, okay, we have all these wonderful characters that we're going to introduce the next film.
Yep. And so it was, I don't know, there was so much that just was very disappointing to me.
They should let the guys who did The Endless and Something in the Dirt direct the Dune film, damn it. Now that would have been good.
They might have done it so much better.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's just... Okay, now, Javier Bardem, he did a good Stilgar. Stilgar is one of my favorite characters. And they made Stilgar borderline psychotic. They made him a fanatic, a total fanatic, you know, a religious fanatic. And
instead of having it slowly build, and
so
still our final transformation into a full religious fanatic after he rode the worm.
Well, I think the progression is that in this movie too. I think that, you know, after not just riding the worm, but because he called up, at least they did this stuff right. The worm that he calls up is the biggest one they've ever seen anyone ever call up. So I guess that's why.
Yeah, my favorite line from David Lynch's Dune. Has he called up a worm? He has called up one sign like the likes of God has never seen.
Still are.
Oh, God.
Still my favorite. Still my favorite. Oh, yeah. And the character of Jameis. Okay. Jameis. Okay. In Lynch's film, he barely gets any time at all. In the miniseries, he is more pronounced, and he shows that really Paul's training in face-to-face combat is still unmatched by anyone. He is really good at that. That doesn't make him a messiah. And this movie keeps making Paul a messiah out of these things that don't make him a messiah. So
yeah,
anyway,
I mean,
the Jameis character,
if they put it in Lynch film, because God damn it, he was trained by Captain Picard, so of course he's going to be the best fighter.
Right. Well, okay, he is the best fighter. None of the Fremen can fight like him. He has been trained well, but with many people train the way that Paul has been trained on Caladan would have been able to fight like that. Okay? It's not he has a gift at fighting, but it's the weirding way that from the Bene Gesserit traditions is what brings the Messiah mystique along that they didn't have in this movie.
Don't forget, this was not in the miniseries of the movie. Well, it was in the books, but his mother trained him in the Bene Gesserit way of fighting, too.
Right, right. No, that is in Lynch's movie.
Yeah.
Because, and it's in the miniseries because there's a point where Thufir says, Paul runs out, walks out. He's done with training. He's just like, I'm done. I'm not in the mood for it. And Gurney says, not in the mood. And so Thufir says, well, you know, your mother's Bene Gesserit training, blah 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 blah. You know, you need more than that. And so they mention it in the miniseries.
You know what, Becky?
And I'm pretty sure. What?
Mood is something for love making and cattle, not fighting.
They say that in the miniseries too. Why isn't it in the big giant epic Dennis movies? Yes, those are great lines. Damn it. I don't know. And because we're not supposed to speak to each other. We're austere. We show the audience the story by being stoic.
Yeah.
And so, you know what? Go see the movie. You know, whatever you like of it is what you like about it. I'm a Dune fan, so I will add it. I already have the first movie in my collection. I will buy the second movie and put it in my collection, and I will watch it several times also, depending on my mood. But I just don't all the money that was put into this, all the time, all the effort, and it's still just a heavy CGI movie instead of a really good science fiction-based political drama. That's my take on it. Let's talk about the other movie.
And speaking of it, on the same weekend where the big budget Dune came out and did lots of money, a small budget, very serious, very Polish sci-fi film came out on Netflix this weekend, and a lot of people's jaws were dropped. And let's see what Miss Vicky Love thinks of Spaceman.
Spaceman is very Polish, I think. It has some really good science fiction in it. And science fiction is always a good way to tell a human story. And that's what they did with this movie, is they told a very human story using the vehicle of science fiction. But there are some things about this movie that just don't really make sense. And so it fails in a lot of its science fiction, in its
The book has,
not in its human story. Oh, there's a book? Oh, shoot. What just happened? Hello? Oh, crap. What just did I... Hello?
No. It kicked me off.
It kicked me off too. Did we go overtime or something?
No.
Okay. Well, can we talk about Spaceman?
Yeah.
Okay. That was weird.
But what I said when I got kicked off is that the book had a much darker ending.
Oh, yeah. Well, how about that? I thought it was going to go there. I don't know what the ending is in the novel, but I thought it was going to go really dark, but it doesn't in the film. It kind of is uplifting, right?
Yeah. Okay, big spoilers. Skip maybe the next 5 minutes if you haven't seen the movie yet and want to watch it. And I'm gonna say it in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You know, at that point where he supposedly gets a hold of his wife and calls her.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the guys who picks him up, the cosmonaut, tells him that he's really Russian and that he's going to be arrested as soon as he goes. So Adam Sandler jumps out of the ship thanks to a man whose life he saved. And he goes and lives inside a memory within that dust cloud and hopes that his wife has a happier ending and stays in the memory of them during happier times.
Oh. That's kind of like a Solera theme.
Yeah.
Oh, I never even thought about connecting those two stories together. No, because you know what's distracting to me is the frickin' spider. Of all the frickin' creatures, why didn't they just make a science fiction weird creature instead of making a goddamn spider? Why? All I could think about is, is he going to open his mouth and chomp him? Oh.
And the spider story is very heartbreaking.
It is. It's a really good story, but the visual was distracting to me for at least half of the time.
Yeah.
It was too distracting. Why is it a spider? Is it a spider in the novel? Do you know?
Yeah. Huh. He even asked me, he said, why did you come back as a spider? And he said, I don't know. This is just how I came out.
Oh, well, that, it's
you
so
know, answers.
Gosh, distracting.
And I heard Adam Sandler was great in it.
You know, Adam Sandler did a great job. And here's the thing. I don't watch Adam Sandler movies. He bothers the fuck out of me. He really does. I hate – my boys used to make me, when they were little, they used to make me watch Adam Sandler movies. Come on, Mom. You got to watch those. Got to watch it with us. And like, oh, crap. And I had to sit through those movies, and I never laughed. I didn't like it. I'm just that kind of person. I don't like Adam Sandler movies.
Yeah.
And – but I have seen him do a couple of dramatic things, and he's an okay dramatic actor. But this movie gave him a platform to be his own dramatic self, and so that was good. There's none of that silly – whip out my dong Adam Sandler thing. It's just not. But here's my problem with this movie is that he's alone in that spaceship. And no science fiction writer would, if you were going to do real science fiction, which this is why people don't understand science fiction, because they use it in something like this. If there was that anomaly, which is the cool science fiction part of this story, there's that anomaly. A dust cloud is headed towards Earth, and they've been seeing it for 4 years in the sky. And so they send out one lone astronaut to go find
cosmonaut.
Out what it is. Cosmonaut. Polish knot. I don't know. He's Yeah, he's Polish, though. He's not a Russian.
Yeah.
And so...
But don't forget this. Solaris. Moon.
Yeah. Well, no, Moon is... There's a reason for that.
Yeah,
there
well,
was no reason.
Reason, but it's people being alone in space about the isolation of space.
Right. I totally understand that. But we know enough about isolation in space that we would never send one person out alone. There's Mark Strong. There's another Mark Strong. He's an actor, and he's the star of a film on Amazon, and I can't think of that name either. Here, let me see if I can find it. He goes out – here, Mark Strong films. He goes out – alone in a capsule towards Mars. And there it is. Okay, I'll tell you what the name of this is, this new film. And then his partner is coming out after him. I guess what they did was they decided that it was cheaper to send them one before the other to Mars, to a habitat that had already been built on Mars or is to be built on Mars. All the stuff is there in capsules alone, and then live together once they get to Mars. So the premise is that for 180 days, the human mind won't break if you're strong enough. And so, yeah, there's a lot of, stuff out there about one person in a capsule by themselves or in a spaceship by themselves. So that's the only thing that I didn't really like about one man in the capsule. But other than that, Adam Sandler did a really good job. Really good job.
Isn't it funny that of all the films that tried to do the deep space thing, the only one to really get it right was Alien or Alien and Aliens?
Yeah. And why they don't look at that more closely is beyond my thinking. They are one of the only ones that ever, one of the few. But, you know, people look at science fiction as a vehicle, not as the point. And so when you look at it as a vehicle, they just believe that you can put any kind of scenario as long as you're telling a human story. And so that's how I think of it.
Yeah. They use the basic structure instead of doing something intelligent with it. They just make a movie.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, since this came from a novel, I didn't even know that, then I think the whole premise and the human story is very valuable because it's all about love. And why the whole question comes up early on of the spider asks the astronaut, why do two people come together in this love bond and then after a little while grow so far apart that they don't even want to be together? And so then they separate and then they find out that they miss each other and want to come back together. What's the whole point? What is this all about? And I think it's a good human story to examine. So that's a good thing.
But that's also one of the unanswerable questions.
Exactly. Totally. Completely. And so that's why I don't like love stories. When all these romantic movies, either they're so shallow that everyone ends up happy, or they're so heartbreaking that everyone, including the audience, is heartbroken and sad and crying. There's no, you know, myriad that's actually the gray stuff in between. And
you grew up in the era of one of the worst romance movies ever made. And
yeah.
I'm just going to say the tagline for it, and you'll know what I mean.
Okay.
Love never means saying you're sorry.
Oh. I actually read that tiny little novella called Love Story, smart enough as a teenager to know that it was just crap. And even though it was about a person who was dying of cancer and the love and all of, and the love keeps going even after death and all, the way that it was produced to the public was just too syrupy. But you know which one I really don't like? That message in the bottle, the bottle one.
Oh, God.
I really don't like that movie, and so many people I know love it, love that movie. It's like, that's worse than watching an Adam Sandler movie. So I don't know. But I think that the Spaceman, it has value as a science fiction movie because it's so intriguing to think about what if a piece of space dust that was formed at the beginning of our universe actually traveled far enough to come into our solar system and interact with our planets and the gravity and the Earth? What would happen? What is that stuff? What would it be made of? It was just, that was super intriguing. Great science fiction right there.
Yeah.
Great.
I think it was because it was Netflix and they didn't have to worry about making a giant budget back. That
right.
They were able to just say, okay, I'm going to make a serious sci-fi film here.
Right. And we're gonna put it out the same time Dune comes out. No, you know what happened? Dune wasn't supposed to. The first announcement back in fall was Dune was coming out on March 15th, the Ides of March, okay, the day Caesar was murdered. And I think that they didn't realize that, and somebody told them that you're putting a movie out on March 15th?
No.
And then they're like, huh?
Go ahead, finish. Sorry.
And so they're like, oh, crap, we should move it to March 1st.
Well, the simple story is COVID. The first film came out because it was done before COVID, and then they got the green light for that one, then everything stopped for COVID, and then everything started to crank back up again, and just when they started shooting Dune 2, the strike happened.
Right, the stupid no, I didn't mean that.
That came up. They hadn't finished the film yet.
Oh. Well, that makes sense.
Because why else would you put a mega budget blockbuster in March? This is usually the second tier.
They used to a long time ago. They used to, back when I was a young adult, they used to break big movies in March. They used to bring them out. March, then one in March, one in April, one in May. And that's the way it was. Then they would do that in the summer. They would usually wait and do the July movie, not June. They would do an August movie before school started. Then they would do a November and December movie. And
yeah,
that's the way it was.
A little film about a shark is really what changed everything.
That little. Oh, you should go to my Facebook page and look at that orca who attacked a great white shark. It's freaking fantastic. You've never seen anything like that. You've just never seen anything like that. Gotta look at that video. Speaking of great white shark.
I'm glad that Spaceman is good. It looked good.
Yeah,
and
you know,
no,
that was another thing.
Explosions. There's no fighting.
Right, there's no explosions, there's no fighting, there's no, and there's none of that. There are no guns, thank God, no bombs, no blood. It's like, oh, nobody gets killed. Yeah, that was refreshing. But also, you believe his spaceship. The inside of it makes sense. I like that about it.
Yeah.
That's good science fiction right there. You know, the whole way he sleeps in a pod, they do that up in the space station. That's how they sleep. And, you know, it's all – and the only joke in the whole thing is that the toilet doesn't work right.
You remember that was one of the most amazing things in 2001. We've seen real spaceships. We've seen people actually looking like they were really walking in space.
Right, right. In 2000, yeah, because Dr. What's-His-Name, he's looking at how to use the space toilet on the way to the moon. the instructions are right there. And it's pretty cool, you know, and he has these expressions. He's like, oh, wow, They talk about, see, these are the things that are left out of this movie Dune. In 2001, when Dr. Floyd is going from Earth to the moon, and then on the moon to the monolith, all these normal things happen. Somebody says, are you hungry? And everyone's like, yeah, what do you got? And they have these little sandwiches, and they remark about how they're better than they used to be. And I mean, that just gives it this reality that ties you into these people that you're watching.
And there's that film about with a big giant monster, but it's really about blue collar workers working in a pretty shittily hold it up because they probably won't spend the money to repair it. Truck in outer space,
right.
Basically. Alien.
Yes. 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 Oh, and how about the movie, the big monster movie from Summer, where it's really about family, the loss of family, the loss of your honor, and how do you regain that when everything's in shambles and continues to be in shambles because this monster comes and just destroys even more of it. Yes. Yeah.
That's the thing about the Japanese. When they created Godzilla, he wasn't a monster. He was their reaction and fears to the Hiroshima bomb.
Yes. Yes. And so you can make movies that are fantastically set in fantastic settings and bring in the human element. You can do that. Think about in Godzilla Minus One. Did you see it?
No, not yet. I want to.
Well, okay. When you see it, I want you to just pay close attention to as this little family, as these people who are thrown together because of all this destruction become a family, and how hard it is for them to actually love each other and admit that they need each other because of all the trauma that they have been through. It's just fantastically done within the bigger picture of a Godzilla movie. It's just best. And you don't see that kind of heart in Dune. You just don't, sadly to say.
So in short, Spaceman and Godzilla Minus One have souls.
Yes. Whereas you'd be hard-pressed to show me who knows Dune so well, show me where the soul is. Maybe Stilgar. Show me the soul. Maybe Chani. Maybe those two characters carry the soul of Dune in this Dennis movie. Certainly not Jessica. Certainly not. And oh, never talked about Timothy Chalamet.
Okay.
Just to say this, I think that he is one of those actors, much like Brad Pitt. When I first saw Brad Pitt a long, 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 long time ago, and all my friends are going, oh, did you see this guy? His name's Pitt. We got to go see Legends of the Fall. Oh, he's so handsome. Blah, 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 blah. And I see it, and I'm like, oh, he can't act very well, can he? And so Timothy Chalamet can actually act better than Brad Pitt could back early on. But Chalamet is growing into a good actor. He's going to be a fantastic actor when he gets to be in his 40s. And so he does his best with this film with what he's given. And remember, austerity is the thing in this film. So he says the same lines over and over again. He has to act the same over and over again. He has to hold his light. I don't know how many.
Repeat the same lines over again. It's like they're saying, okay, you out here on the audience is stupid and didn't catch that the first time, so we're going to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. Unlike the one that we see, me and Tracy watched last week, The Endless. Well, they might tell you something, but if you missed it, that's your ass.
Then you missed it. Remember, we watched it. We did a watch on that. And if you miss it, you miss it. Sorry. Because that's what good movie making is all about.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Vic. It was so great to having you back tonight.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, thanks for asking me to do this. It just worked out perfectly. And I miss being on a podcast with you very much, very much.
And I hope you didn't mind the little surprise at the first of it. Even she didn't know about what I was up to.
Right, right. That's because you like to always surprise people, which is a good thing. It's kind of really nice.
Yeah. And upcoming, as soon as the HIIC over at Deviant Legion, what's your next show over there with the HIIC?
I'm doing this series on authors that Hollywood loves. Our next one will be Philip K. Dick. We just did one on Michael Crichton, all the movies that Hollywood has produced from his novels, and we're going to do one on Philip K. Dick next Tuesday. And don't you guys have something coming up tomorrow?
Yeah, we're going to be doing women and our tribute to Women Month. We're going to be doing two films with the great, often forgotten in the women, and talking about women who are directors and actors, Ida Lupino with The Hitchhiker, which is about two guys that go off on a wild weekend to Mexico to mess around with their wives, but they run into this psychotic killer who kidnaps them. And it's basically like their moral punishment for lying to their wives and going out. And the other one is The Woman in the Room, which stars Ida as this woman who's trapped in a house all day with this psycho who breaks into it while her husband's out doing husbandly things at his work.
Yeah, that's a really good film.
Yeah, and as you see, she loved her stuff like, you men ought to be ashamed for doing that nasty you did and trying to blame it all, you know.
Right, right, right. Well, Ida Lupino is, I mean, she's like the foundation of the 20th century for women. If it wasn't for her, we probably wouldn't have ever got started in the movie business. TV business, anything, you know, on the business side, except acting, of course. Everybody likes to look at women, but we can do more than just look pretty.
Yeah. And thank you again, Vicky.
Oh, you're welcome, Stephen. You're welcome. It just feels like home when I come and do a show with you.
Yeah. It does. It feels like part of my family again.
Yeah, it does, huh? Really does. Yeah. Well, we'll do more. We'll do more. Okay, well, then that's about it for tonight. And thanks for everyone who's listening. It's been fun, Stephen.
Yes, it has.
Okay, good night, everyone.